The GI Research Foundation was able to produce this podcast with sponsorships from AbbVie and Metro Infusion Centers.
And then I had to do a lot of work on my own life and just removing stress. And then when I figured out how to live with this, which could have been a lot earlier, everything got a lot better.
All right. Well, let's get started. So hi, everyone. My name is Anna Gomberg. Thank you so much for joining us today on this episode of Visceral, which is a podcast of the GI Research Foundation. This is a really special episode because we have never done this before. Today, we have an amazing sort of panel round table of patients who come often to support group. And they are some of the wisest people I've heard speak about living with IBD, Crohn's disease, and ulcerative colitis. And I'm just so grateful that they've taken some time today and want to share a little bit about their experiences with us and what we can learn from them. So I wanted to introduce everyone. Today we have Paul and Sarah and Rachel and Skip, who are all patients living with Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis. I want to just give everybody a moment to introduce themselves a little bit. Paul, why don't we start with you? Can you tell us a little about yourself?
Sure. I'm Paul, and I've had IBD, or specifically ulcerative colitis, since 2000. And originally here, you know, in Chicago, and I work at a university teaching, and you know, just really happy to be here.
Thank you so much. That's wonderful. And Sarah, how about you?
I have ulcerative colitis. I was diagnosed about a year ago, although my symptoms started back in 2018. So it took a bit of a journey for me to finally get effective care and really get on a good treatment plan now. And in my journey as well, I found some really great resources, including this wonderful support group that just has a wealth of information.
Wonderful. Thank you so much for being here. Skip, going around the table, you want to introduce yourself?
Hi, everybody. My name's Skip. I got diagnosed originally with ulcerative colitis a little over 30 years ago now. It's been back in 93. And back then, prednisone and sulfasalazine were kind of the things that were given to me by my gastro to try to help improve my condition. I spent a lot of my career in sales and marketing and quality management, and that had me on the road all the time. Planes and automobiles were pretty much weekly occurrences. So that was difficult. Trips were always a hard time for me because I would just not eat when I would know I'd have to be on an airplane for a while because I knew bathrooms weren't really readily accessible. About 8 years ago, my diagnosis changed to Crohn's. And after being on prednisone and sulfasalazine and really not having them work and having the bad side effects of multi-year prednisone use, my doctor started me on Humira. I failed on Humira after about 3 years, but had success with it. And then I moved to Stelara and azathioprine about 5 years ago. I've been about as close to remission as I've ever been on those two. I love this support group and the other two that I attend regularly. And I think I learned more from the support groups and from all of the folks that are afflicted with this even more than I've learned from a lot of my doctors. So it's a little bit about me.
Thank you so much for sharing. Oh my gosh, what a journey. And Rachel, how about you? Last but definitely not least.
Hi, everybody. My name is Rachel. I've been going to the support group basically almost since the beginning. So I've been going for a very long time. I have Crohn's disease. I've had Crohn's since about 2009. I got diagnosed when I was around 19, and I've had surgeries. I've had kind of different, just a journey with it in general. I do live in Chicago, and I'm really excited to come to group and learn from everybody and try to help people on their journey with IBD.
You've helped me. You've been an amazing resource. Oh my gosh. I'm so glad I met you. So I wanted to start out just sort of at the beginning and thinking about what was it like to be diagnosed with Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis? What did that feel like? What were the first thoughts that you had when that diagnosis happened for you, when you received that diagnosis from your doctor? If it was whenever that happens, if you can kind of get back to that maybe very important memory for yourselves. I see Sarah nodding. Do you want to share?
Sure. So again, this was about just roughly over a year ago for me, but my symptoms at that point had been occurring for nearly 5 years. And this was by that time the third gastroenterologist I had seen, and it was for a colonoscopy. So I had seen other gastroenterologists in the office and shared my symptoms and was kind of telling them about what was going on, and even primary care doctors as well. And, you know, they would, you know, express some concern, you know, ask me questions, write lots of notes, and essentially were just sort of telling me I had IBS and were recommending specific kind of like restrictive diets and things like that to kind of treat my symptoms. And so for all that time, I just sort of started living as if it was normal. And so by the time I had a colonoscopy and they really like got a look at the tissue, and at this point it was severe ulcerative colitis, it was sort of like validation. You know, I had sort of just been brushed off for so long as if this was just sort of like, this is life now. But now I had a diagnosis, and with a diagnosis, there's information on what to do, how to treat it, you know, how to take care of it, how to, you know, live in a better way. So for me, it was incredibly validating. It was like less of a scare. I mean, it's not, you know, great news. You know, it's not necessarily a diagnosis that people want, but it was at least a sense of relief in that moment.
Oh my gosh. I think we can all echo that, that like with a diagnosis and a name and an understanding that this is not something that's all in your head or that is something that is your fault. I think that there is that relief. What about someone else's experience with that first diagnosis? Paul, I see you nodding too.
Absolutely. I remember I went to see my general physician, and this is 2000, so it was a while ago, but I remember that they said something, and I remember not even listening because I was so young, and I'm like, okay, what's the pill? Like, what's the thing I got to take to get over this? Like, you know, like, why is everybody so worried? And so then I just kind of I wasn't really accepting the fact that this is a chronic illness, and I'm pretty sure they told me that early on, but I was just kind of like, more like very mature, not really aware that this is going to be a lifelong thing. And I think if somebody would have told me back then, like if I was talking to that person, I would have been like, look, I'm 45 and I'm able to take the bus, the train, I can fly, I can teach class. I, you know, you can do performances, you can do a lot of things. You can go for walks, you can, you know, have a social life, you can have a work life. Very, very, you know, what some might consider to be normal or be worried that is going to be not available. But you got to do a little bit of legwork to make sure you're in a position. One of the things being the support group that I'm involved with here, and I love, because it gives me a great opportunity to just know kind of that I'm not the only person. But when I got that diagnosis, then that particular doctor then ran me through just a gauntlet of exams and finally said, I think it's this thing called Crohn's disease. And then they got, we got a colonoscopy going. He got somebody who just retired out of retirement to come and do my colonoscopy, which was pretty cool. And then she let me know, like, yeah, you have Crohn's disease. Your doctor will talk to you more. And then just began like, boy, like a good, I mean, I was going back to school at that time. And so I dropped like 35 pounds that summer. I went from like May of 2000 and then just dropped a ton of weight. When I went back in August, like nobody recognized me because I was like paper thin. And then I was finished up school, and it wasn't until, and then I went to school, and then I just started to try different medications that I can't even remember right now. But it was, you know, prednisone was one of them, and just to try to get me back. Nothing was really stable. And then I finally found when I went to the University of Chicago. And then their way, I had my doctor kind of, you know, had my evaluation, talked, and he's like, I think it's actually ulcerative colitis. And during that whole time, from that day, when I first found out till now, it was like a process. And I was really hesitant to try and learn more because I just wanted to get it over with. But there's like, there is no over with. I just never got that through my head. And then finally, when I accepted that, I started to know I have to do more. My life is going to be different. Then I was able to kind of find the right medical team around me who then helped me understand that. There are certain things you got to do. He ended up being the vice president of the school that I was working at. Just happened to be in the cafeteria. And he's like, we're eating like the same thing. And I go, yeah, I got like a stomach thing. And he's like, oh, me too. And then he's like, I go to the University of Chicago. Next thing I know, I'm there. And they put me on acetol, back then, I think it was mesalamine, and then azathioprine. And boy, that helped a ton. And then I had to do a lot of work on my own life and just removing stress, trying to figure out what's the best way to commute. I never thought I could commute. There was a time where I was just working other places and was just unhappy. And then when I figured out how to live with this, which could have been a lot earlier, everything got a lot better. Ugh.
Hearing you describe that and like the all of those sort of capitulations and considerations that you were making is so familiar to me and just sounds so, I mean, it's also the developmental process that you described of being like a kid and being like, okay, cool. So what's the pill? Like, I think many of us were right. And not really the understanding of the chronicity of an illness like this, a disease that like truly is so very much a part of who we are is such a big part of that. Skip or Rachel? Skip, do you want to talk a little bit about
this? Sure, yeah. I remember my first diagnosis is a lot of confusion more than anything and feeling kind of like you're on an island by yourself and not a lot of support. And not a whole lot of informational resources back when I got diagnosed. The abilities of flipping around on the internet and finding out about all kinds of things at our fingertips like we do now was kind of limited then. And I originally got diagnosed with ulcerative colitis. And when I had that first colonoscopy, again, there was just this confusion. Is it ulcerative colitis? Is it Crohn's? What might it be? Because it was a little confusing where the inflammation was in my tract. And I went down, I was living in Atlanta at the time. I went down to start a relationship and visiting one of the premier doctors down there who is in IBD and has since retired. And he was helpful in getting me the right resources. And I got the first of several fistulas when I was early diagnosed. And for those that don't know about what a fistula is, it's an abnormal tract that can tie your intestinal wall either to another organ or to your outside skin. And typically, this abnormal tract will get pockets of mucus and pus and will get infected and becomes real painful. The treatment back then was kind of different than what they do now. They put setons in now that have eventually fallen out for me and they've completely healed over and it's gotten much better. But I don't remember anything available in terms of a support group back then. I just kind of rode this train blindly. I booked the aisle seat whenever I could on an airplane. And like I said earlier, I tried to avoid eating before I knew I was going to have to be away from a bathroom for a while. And that's a tough way to live. Nobody wants to live that way. But with the help of some really good doctors and the advancement of the biologics and biosimilars, this is a, you know, there's never a good time to be diagnosed with this disease, I guess, but this is a great time to be able to get the proper therapies and the proper medicines that you need to get this into remission and get your life back to normal again. So the support groups have been so helpful for me, learning from each other and helping each other. For the newer folks that come in, they can learn from us just like I learned from the other folks. And I couldn't say more better, you know, more great things about attending these groups. Thanks.
It sounds like a commercial for the support group. I promise you, go to support group. Don't go to support group. It's fine. Everybody wants you to get the care that you need. Rachel, what Skip was telling me about living with fistulizing Crohn's and setons and all of this, I've just had so many conversations with you. I think over the last 10 years, I think that maybe I've known you that long. Can you tell me a little bit about your diagnosis? What was that like for you? Because it was a while ago, but like, what was your diagnosis experience? Because I know that you also have had a journey.
I've had a journey, but it's definitely been different than most people. Didn't have really anything symptom-wise at first. I was in college. I was at college in Florida. I was at Valencia. And it was like, all of a sudden, I just felt really sick, had to go to the bathroom. Literally every fluid in my body was coming out. And I said, okay, like, I'm going to stop doing this. Went back to class. Still didn't feel well. Went back to the bathroom. I literally was having a panic attack. I was literally making my peace with God. I'm like, this is it. I'm going to be, they're going to find me dead in this bathroom with my pants around my ankles, finally. And again, you laugh about it now, and I think that's like a very important thing. Don't lose your sense of humor when you have this illness. Anyway, I literally thought I was going to die right there. Because again, this is the first inkling that something is wrong. Finally crawled out of the bathroom, cleaned myself up, worse, you know, make sure the bathroom did not leave it, like look like a bomb exploded, did not leave anything around. Crawl out and call my dad. He picks me up. For that year, I'm thinking it's going to go away. It's this diarrhea, it's going to stop. It's going to go away. Whole year. Finally, it's just like, look, it's not going away. It's not stopping. It's a thing. Go to the doctor, and the doctor literally was like this with the paperwork, not like giving an answer. And I'm like, okay. My sister, while she did not have Crohn's, she had lupus. So the nature of chronic illness was not something that was foreign to me. Even though, again, I was only 19, she was 16 when she got diagnosed with. So like that, the nature of like that existence. And he's like, well, you know, you have Crohn's disease. And I'm like, all right, cool. Like, what's the next step? Like I knew that I was in for a chronic illness situation and battle. Again, did get diagnosed with Pentasa and Lialda were like the first like rounds of that they were giving me. But I definitely was coming at it where like this, I knew that it was a chronic illness. I knew that this was going to like be something that I'm in for the long haul, because of the fact that I had a family member who was very close to me and dealing with it literally with her lupus, the same battle that I was going through in the chronic illness sense, not in the same battle, because she obviously, it's a different situation that she had. So, you know, it's unfortunate that she also was sick at that, you know, at a young age, but at the same time, like being able to commiserate with a sibling and knowing that you're not alone in a, this chronic illness battle, you know, it's in a weird way, like you're fortunate because you know somebody. And you can talk to them about the things that go on. When I go to support group, I frequently, people are like, I don't know anybody. And like literally this going to support group is like the only way I can like talk to someone about things that are going on that it's not, I guess, nice to say in public with other people, like the stuff that's going on in your life. And this is the first experience that they have talking to somebody. So I consider myself fortunate in a way, but I also know that's just my personality type is very much like, well, what's the positive about this? And when a lot of times there just really isn't much of a positive, but you try.
That is absolutely your personality type. Your personality type is ray of sunshine. I get it. It's in one of those inventories, I'm pretty sure, that I learned about in grad school.
Metro Infectious Disease Consultants, the parent company of Metro Infusion Centers, is proud to announce their 30th anniversary gala celebration on October 26th in downtown Chicago. With 110 physicians and over 220 infusion centers nationwide, we are committed to making life-saving therapies available in a comfortable and cost-effective environment while continuing to support the future generations of infectious disease physicians. Please visit us at www.midcgala.com to learn how you can participate. Again, that is www.midcgala.com.
Fast forwarding, because if we don't fast forward a little bit, this episode will be 6 hours long. What have you learned that you feel like is like, if you could crystallize some of your knowledge into something that is really important to share with people, what have you learned about living with Crohn's disease or ulcerative colitis over your patient journey?
Really, the biggest thing for me is I buried my head in the sand for many years with this and just took pills. And they kind of made the symptoms partially go away, but really didn't get me anywhere close to any type of normalcy or remission. And I just kind of powered through it. We had just had our first child at the time when I got diagnosed. And there just, to me, didn't seem like there were a whole lot of options out there at that time. Don't think that way. Yes, you have to take control and be your own advocate for your own health. But don't feel like you're alone. There's so much to rely on. Different support groups in the different universities and teaching hospitals here in the area all have great setups that can help guide you to resources so you can educate yourself on this disease. So don't feel like you're all alone and by yourself. There's a lot of support. Our friends don't get this. Our family doesn't really get this. Our coworkers don't really get this and don't understand what it's like to live with this. we all do because we have it and we can really relate with each other and learn a lot from each other. So just the only thing I could leave with is don't feel like you're alone. There's lots of resources. Reach out, find them, ask for help, and it's out there and available to you. My life is so much better now than it used to be. It's a blessing, and it's a journey. And everybody has a unique story. Not everybody responds the same way to these medicines. Not everybody responds the same way to the surgeries that are out there. But there's a lot of options now. So that's the biggest thing I could say.
Totally. Sarah, how about you?
I would say definitely a lot of the same things that Skip was saying. Because in my experience, I was not really given a whole lot of information. I took it upon myself to go find more information. So luckily, you know, for me being diagnosed in present day, there has been so much more accessibility to really good information on IBD. And then from there, it made so much sense that absolutely the most important essential thing for somebody diagnosed, especially newly diagnosed, is that you definitely need a specialist, an IBD specialist. A lot of gastroenterologists treat gastroenterology and may even attempt to treat Crohn's and colitis. And if they aren't a specialist, in my opinion, and unfortunately in my experience, it's not enough. Your disease can progress pretty significantly and seriously without it. So even if you start out with just going to a generalist, which is probably the first step into, you know, getting a diagnosis or getting some understanding of your symptoms, from there, ask this doctor if they specialize in treating your condition. And if they do, great. And if they tend to be more general, that's totally okay. It might be time to just start searching for somebody who absolutely only treats or specializes in IBD. If you're not sure how to find someone, the Crohn's and Colitis Foundation has a directory where you can search for specialists, or you can do a general search of, you know, IBD specialists on the internet. That would be kind of my number one thing to recommend.
These are great tips. We've got make sure that you're being a good advocate for yourself, find an IBD specialist instead of just a general GI specialist, which is, you know, truly a subspecialty that might not even be available that easily where different people are living. Those are really good tips. Paul, do you have anything to volunteer?
Sure. There's three things, kind of a little bit of what people have said already. But I think the first thing is know that right now there's more awareness than ever before about it. The first time when I got it, I was like, no one's going to get it. No one's going to understand. And nowadays, people who talk about it are like, oh, my cousin has that, you know, or this or that. And then there's a little bit more, there's much more, I should say, awareness about it, just so that people know that it exists, as opposed to that he has like a stomach thing. Like, that doesn't happen to me as often. And which is great, and it alleviates a lot of stress and concern on my end that nobody's going to get why I'm like, I just got a request today to speak at a commencement, and I'm like, they don't understand, you know, they understand why I'm not going to be able to do it, or if I want to, it's up to me, right? It depends on my comfort level, but there's a communication that can happen there because they get, you know, that that's going to be a thing for me. The other thing is, figure out, I would say for me, one of the best things that I ever did was to figure out my menu, just so that I can like have like foods that I enjoy on some level. It takes time. It's trial and error. There's, I mean, at the beginning, like there was a lot of early on for me, there were weekends where I'm like, okay, I'm going to try this food out and then just literally sit and wait and see what happens. Like, I'm not going anywhere. And then, you know, you kind of figure out, because everybody's diet, I find, is completely different. So figure out your diet. And then, like Rachel was kind of talking about, like, your experiences that you have right now might be difficult. They might be very challenging and sad to you. But know that as long as you know you keep working on things in time, they're gonna be things that you look back on and go, look how much work I've done on getting better, and this has benefited me to do X, Y, and Z. For me, it was figuring out my diet, you know, finding a support group, and then one of them is having a good attitude about the fact that I'm learning about me. Like, I'm learning about my stomach. I'm learning about how I feel, why I feel a certain way. And later becomes, for me at least, it was funny. You know, when I look back, I'm just like, man, I used to like do this because it was such a, you know, it was so difficult for me to do X, Y, and Z. And now I can, it was hilarious when I first took the train. I lived right by the train to go to work. And I was like, I have to drive every day. And then one day I'm like, you know, let me try and like just doing it. And then I just did it. And I remember I was the only one on the train, but I was like, this is amazing, you know? And I was like, this offers me a whole new outlet of life. And then I got to where I was going. And then I was just kind of like, I was like, back, you know, and then just like, and I could take the Metro and I could fly, you know, just, but you have to make those steps. You have to try. You're not going to always be comfortable, you know, just having a way to get out of it if you have to, in case, you know, you have your emergency bag and whatnot of toilet paper and change of clothes, what have you. Basic stuff I always find helps, at least for me back then, set the tone for an opportunity to really get to know more and have confidence.
That's great. Those are really powerful words and really good ideas. Thank you so much. Rachel, how about you?
I was trying to take notes and be like, I don't want to copy anybody, but you know, for one thing, a cure is being worked on. Like there's IBD centers, there's all these different things. They're working on a cure. Like a lot of people, I think they're like, the vague notion of like getting better for that, you know, there is research actively working on a cure, which I think is very exciting because, you know, in some illnesses, you know, there's a lot of orphan diseases out there where it's like a cure is not actively being worked on the same way it is for IBD. So that's, I think that's very, people should be encouraged by that. I think keeping a sense of humor about what's going on with you, because it, you know, it's going to be necessary. I mean, there was one time where I was at a place in Florida and they did colonoscopies and they were like, well, some people are going to do pushback. And I said, some of them are going to be pushback, but someone is sticking a camera in me because I did not go through the prep for you to not give me the colonoscopy that I am here to take. So you have to kind of like, you know, find that sense of humor within yourself. Cause again, some you'll laugh about things that stuff that happened where normal people would be like, that happened to you when you're laughing about it. It's like, well, you know, it's on a day, you know. Finding a community to be your backup. And again, not necessarily if a support group is not there, but, you know, some kind of community for yourself is really important to really, because sometimes people, you know, don't go through this alone in this world. And also to be careful what you read about online, because there is, take what you read with a grain of salt. Sometimes people will go online when they're not feeling well, when they're feeling they're most sick and they're just on the computer saying, oh, this is happening to me and I feel really bad. What you don't hear about is a lot of people who are like outliving their life because they've gotten treatment. They've, you know, they're with their communities and that they're not writing online, unfortunately, saying like, man, things are so great right now. I just went camping and I just went base diving, you know, that they do that. Like people do things. They're having kids. They're outliving their life. You know, some people take what you read online with a grain of salt. Because there will be people, you may go online and think, oh, this is inevitable for me. You know, it's going to be surgery and I'm going to have to, and it's like, there's surgery means a lot of things. It doesn't just mean one thing. It can mean a lot of things to different people and different, do they have Crohn's? Do they have ulcerative colitis? It means a lot of things. And even within those, there's different kinds of surgeries and what they mean. So really, again, making sure you talk to your doctor about what that means, what a surgery mean, what are the different options, you know? Just to make sure you explore that, but take what you read online with a grain of salt.
It's very, very good advice also.
This episode is brought to you by AbbVie. AbbVie's mission is to discover and deliver innovative medicines that solve serious health issues today and address the medical challenges of tomorrow. We strive to have a remarkable impact on people's lives across several key therapeutic areas. For more information about AbbVie, please visit us at www.abbvie.com. Follow AbbVie on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, and LinkedIn.
Just again, to sort of turn things to another point of really a lot of, we've touched on a little bit in our discussion, but what would you like to share about diet and nutrition with other patients that maybe you've learned that you didn't know when you were first diagnosed that you know now about living with Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis? Maybe we'll start with Sarah for this one. Sarah, do you want to jump in?
Sure. It's a little bit of a mystery for me. I mostly just sort of gather information of what other people are doing and kind of, you know, you hear all kinds of things. In general, my symptoms really don't seem to have a rhyme or rhythm with what I eat. If I'm in a flare, everything is bad. And if I'm not in a flare, everything is good. So right now I'm not in a flare. So I'm enjoying all the foods that I was missing for a while when I was having to, you know, only have like bland things that would hopefully tame things. When I was first suspected to have IBS, the doctor at that time, back in 2018, suggested that I follow the low FODMAP diet, which I did do for a good while. It took a long time, and my symptoms did improve for a period of time. But then it just got incredibly boring. And so I was like, I want to eat what I want to eat again, because I guess I'm better. And then things came back and it was a lot worse. Recently, I tried low FODMAP again last year when my symptoms were really out of control, and it didn't do anything. It just like didn't touch it. So this is a sort of in progress situation for me right now, just still trying to figure out if there's anything to diet and nutrition that might help me as I pursue remission, because I'm not yet there.
Totally, totally fair. Completely. Paul, I know you have a lot to say about this. What do you think?
Oh, yeah. So I kind of mentioned before, you know, the way I found out early on, I remember a lot of people, or I shouldn't say a lot of people, a lot of the medical staff was like, you know, you should try milk and this other variations of milk that are not just standard milk. And it was like literally like every weekend, I'm like, well, this is, you know, almond milk weekend, you know, and I'm just like trying that out and then seeing how I could go. I was living at Wisconsin at the time. So I would be like, okay, let me get in a car and drive out. And then just, because there's no one there. And so it's like, I would just drive.
Popular place to find alternative milks in the dairy state.
Right, exactly. And so I would drink the milk, wait like an hour, get in my car and just start driving away from where I was living, going towards Minnesota because it's a very empty road. And then I just remember being like, I'm okay. I'm like, and then, okay, maybe that's on the list. And I would just do that and would gain me confidence, allow me to create a menu of some kind for myself. And then it just came down to, okay, this seems to work, these don't. But kind of like what Rachel was talking about, I find that it's like, I'm not going to say a never ending, but I definitely think like you're going to have to make adjustments, because there's going to be times where you're going to be flared up. Maybe you ate something that you didn't know had X, Y, and Z. That happens. And then all of a sudden your stomach starts to act up a little bit. Then you got to go to something. For me, I always, my base diet is typically in the morning is steel cut oatmeal with some fruit. Frozen fruit in there. And then I'll have for lunch, like some type of chicken salad. And then for dinner, it's chicken breast, maybe with rice, with a salad. But sometimes I switch tuna in there. I just keep things as real nice and bare when it comes to maybe not feeling my best. But then after a while, yeah, and I feel better. And I talk to my, whether it be nurse practitioner or doctor, and they'll let me, they were like, okay, it sounds like this is what's happening. Why don't you eat, let's say, yogurt and a fig bar in the mornings, and let's see if that helps. And sure enough, things gets me back on track. So kind of like monitoring yourself all the time to eventually get to a point where you're kind of like, okay, this is what happened. I talked to my doctor or my nurse practitioner before. I'm going to try this. And that way, when I talk to them, I can say I've tried these things. Keeping a log, you know, early on is really important to track how your food or your stomach has been reacting, how your body's reacting to particular foods. That, for me at least, helped out a ton. And you know, kind of like what Skip was talking about. You know, I was a comedian for a long time, and I got to be on stage for 45 minutes to an hour and a half. And so there were a lot of times where I was kind of like, okay, do I just not eat today? You know, and that's a possibility. But then after a while, I started being like, you know, I'm pretty good if I eat, you know, a late breakfast and then just don't eat anything else. So all of our bodies are going to be different. Can you take the time to find out what your process is, going through a healthy diet with your nutritionist, you know, and then figuring these things out step by step. Don't put the burden on yourself to figure all this out in a week. You know, takes a long time, and that's okay, because it's all an investment in yourself and your happiness and your well-being.
Completely. I promise you, he's very funny in other settings. I think he's much funnier when he's not, you know, talking about bowel disease. Rachel, how about you? What about nutrition specifically? Like, what have you learned about nutritional supplements and things like that?
Well, I do think, you know, again, folks should, again, take information with a grain of salt. A lot of things, which again, how we've made progress, there are dietitians that work specifically with GI folks, you know, that have training. The part of your colon that is inflamed or diseased or sick is going to affect, you know, sometimes how you're absorbing nutrition. I had part of my colon that was removed is the part that processes B12. So I have to have B12 shots. So, you know, making sure you pay attention to that, because sometimes how your mood gets affected and things like that, you know, that does come into play. I got to admit, you know, buying a, getting a blender, you know, for a lot of IBD folks is going to be like a game changer for when you really want to eat certain foods, but they got to be blended up and you're not feeling well. So, I mean, that's my, and again, trying to focus on like this nutrition piece, but sometimes also if you're not feeling well and you just want to eat chicken McNuggets and fries, that's okay. You know, if it's, if you're like, hey, that's going to make me feel better and I'm not going to have too much reaction of it, don't worry about what other people are saying. Like, focus on what's going to be comfortable for you. And on the not nutrition thing, but a food thing, like, you know, your prep, make sure it's cold. You want to make sure that prep is cold, and make sure that different when you take the prep, you know, swallowing a little something to the little juice afterwards can help get the taste out of your mouth, because that prep.
Ooh, yeah, we're transitioning to colonoscopy prep, which is jumping on my next question, which is what's your favorite colonoscopy prep?
I do think like Sprite, ginger ale, and white apple juice. I think that's not mentioned enough, the white apple juice. I mean, sorry, white grape juice, excuse me. That stuff, I mean, it really does help get the taste of prep out of my mouth, which I'm like.
Anybody else have any colonoscopy prep tips?
I had no idea you could even just like have something else that's a flavor, but keeping it cold, that's like the one thing that I, you know, like put it in the fridge. It's like a little bit less terrible, or a straw, just like get that in the back of your mouth as fast as possible. Try to bypass tasting it. Just get it back there.
So there was a time where I would just do the, I'm very like, once it works, I don't change it kind of person. And so I never, and then my nurse practitioner is like, you know, you can do something else besides the drink, right? And I was like, what? And so I was always doing that jug of water, and it was like, whoever was with me was going to take me to the hospital. They were always like, right, cheering me on when I was doing it, you know, just like, here we go. And I'm chugging it down and I'm just like, you know, it's brutal. And then there's a moment where somebody was like, you know, as long as your doctor says it's okay, you can try other things. And so I tried, like, I don't even remember what it's called. It's like there's two shots of, I don't know what. And then you do that. But then there's also pills. There's variety. So talk to your doctor about that. But for me, the most favorite one is the one where you have two bottles. They're dark bottles. You take one and then you just take a shot of that. And then you just drink a lot of water with that. But then I always have, since I was a kid, I always drank a lot of Gatorade. And so I buy like, and this is me, okay? Like, I'm just, talk to your doc. don't do what I'm doing unless you talk to your doc. But I buy like 4 gallons of Gatorade, of lemon Gatorade. And then I'm just drinking that thing the day before I even start my prep. And then the day of, and I just keep drinking it, because at no point throughout my, up until the time you can, but at no point until I'm actually at the hospital and done with everything am I hungry, because I'm so full and bloated from the Gatorade that somebody can come by me with my favorite food and I'll be like, no, thank you. You know, it's just, I'm just too full. And so that for me, it makes it, now it's just kind of like, Annie saw me on my last one and she, you know, most people are kind of like, good morning. And I was like, what's going on, Annie? All right, let's do it. You know, it's like, let's go. And I was really, yes or no, right?
Yeah, completely. No. And I will say, I think most Crohn's patients can't even look at 4 gallons of lemon Gatorade without wanting to, after all of their colonoscopy preps, but I salute your commitment to the brand. You are an athlete, and we are very, I'm very impressed. Skip, what about you? Any hot tips?
Yeah, I'll reiterate what everybody else was saying. It has gotten better. There are options out there now for the prep. Definitely Chill It. That always made a big difference for me. But realize the importance of why you need to do a good job with a thorough prep. When your gastroenterologist or your specialist goes up into your digestive tract and uses that camera to look around, you don't want them to be getting involved with anything other than a very clean tract. You need to make sure you've done the prep and follow it to the T. Lots of options out there now to add different types of flavoring into it as well. I've always taken a couple of the laxatives as well the day before to try to help clean out the digestive tract, but you grin and bear it. Lots of exciting things on the horizon, especially with UFC, with some of the great CT scans that are being done and being evaluated, and a lot of great studies going on to find out alternative ways to examine our systems as well. So lots of options coming down the pike.
Yeah, the diagnostics have dramatically changed since since the earlier days of diagnosis, and some things we don't use anymore, like some tests that were sort of barium focused small bowel follow through, where they used a camera to sort of, or an ultrasound to kind of follow through where barium was in your system, and now they don't even do that anymore. But we have intestinal ultrasound, which is a new, brand new treatment diagnostic option that is available to patients with IBD now, where they can look at inflammation like in a clinic appointment, no prep. Certainly not a substitute for colonoscopy, but very exciting for those of us that have wanted to know in a clinic appointment, how am I doing, without necessarily getting blood work or a colonoscopy or an MRI or an abdominal CT or any of the other more invasive tests. So this has been phenomenal. I feel like I could really, truly talk to you all forever. And I have the privilege of talking to you guys all the time. So I'm really happy that we got to do this, and I hope we get to do this again. I just want to thank you all for participating in this episode of Visceral. Paul, Sarah, Rachel, and Skip. And I know that we're doing this in such a way that I can see all of you and I know all of you. And I'm just really struck by how diverse and different your experiences are, how many different kinds of people are in this room and in our support group every month, having totally similar and yet varied experiences with living with Crohn's disease and ulcerative colitis. So I can't thank you enough for showing and sharing this little tip of that iceberg with us. And I hope we can do this again, because there's a lot more to talk about. So thank you all for coming.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.
Thanks, absolutely. Everybody. Thanks, Annie.
Thank you.
Thank you. And we'll talk again soon.
Thank you for listening to this episode of the podcast Visceral from the GI Research Foundation. This episode was written and produced by me, Anna Gomberg, and edited and mixed by the incredible Mike Collins Dowden, who also composed our theme music. We hope you will join us next time. Until then, to access other podcasts and learn more about research to treat, prevent, and cure digestive diseases, as well as access additional educational materials, please visit the website at giresearchfoundation.org and follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and LinkedIn. Thank you again to our sponsors, AbbVie and Metro Infusion Centers.